He appreciated this. At the moment, the mare was stabled with the other horse, her nose deep in a feed bucket. Raleigh was a real problem, though. Neither Wade nor Nicky cared for dogs, which struck him as odd for working farmers. They hadn't wanted Raleigh in the house, much less running loose around the animals. In the end, Tom had nailed together a rough shelter and put it and Raleigh out in the fenced-in vegetable garden. Raleigh had barked for half the night on the first day. When he'd let the dog out to run around, the Golden had taken off for the ruined barn. Wade had a fit.
"That dog scares my layers out of letting go of their eggs. It'll be eating buckshot for dinner."
After that, Raleigh stayed in the dead garden. He only hoped the dog wasn't getting sick. Maybe it was just excited by all the unfamiliar smells. He was only aware that Wade had asked a question because the pause had spun out too long.
"I'm sorry, what?"
"I said if you could see your way to stay a couple more days, I could use the help. Got that roof to fix, and I'm just no good on a ladder."
"Yeah, look, Wade, about that..." Tom slotted the shovel into the side of the wheelbarrow. "I think I've put you and Nicky out enough."
"You still upset about the dog?"
Wade flapped a hand larger than a ham hock.
"Things are so quiet around here, and then the dog starts in. Just got on my nerves."
Wade brightened.
"You know, we have some hamburger set by. I don't know a dog doesn't like that. We need to be friends, is all. Get Nicky to mash some up with a couple eggs and..."
"No," Tom said. "You should save your meat. I really need to be moving on come tomorrow."
"What's your hurry?"
"Just like to get where I'm going."
"Where to?"
"East, I guess." Lifting the wheelbarrow, Tom pushed for the open barn door. "Then south." Wade waddled after.
"East coast? Bad idea. They're going to glow for about 10,000 years, from what I heard."
"Oh, I probably won't go that far." After the relative shelter of the barn, the wind cut his skin, and Tom blinked away tears. A gust snatched at the flagpole's halyard rope. Snaps clanged against aluminum. Both the U.S. and now an old colonial flag rippled and snapped like sheets on a clothesline. "I'll probably stay in Michigan for a while, and then maybe head down into Wisconsin again," he said, only half of which was a fib. Once he found Alex, they were heading north and away from this craziness. Minnesota, or Jed's place on that island, Canada. "We'll see."
"Family?"
Tom tipped the wheelbarrow, then began raking out the load of pig manure. "No, I need to find someone, that's all."
"Oh?"
Wade was balding, but he had eyebrows thick as furry caterpillars. One crawled toward his scalp.
"Where?"
"I'm not exactly sure, but..." He hesitated. He'd been deliberately vague about where he was headed. Why, he wasn't exactly sure. "She went to Rule, the last I know."
"A girl? In Rule?"
His tone made Tom look up. "There a problem?"
"You might want to reconsider."
Wade wore glasses with thick lenses and the kind of birth control goggles only the military could love. Wade hot on a lens and scrubbed with a dingy red kerchief.
"Way's lousy with chuckies, thicker than ticks on a ginger mutt."
Tom thought of the two he'd killed and the half-munched corpse of the old woman. "How many are we talking?"
"A lot. Look, Tom, I don't want to tell you your business."
Wade hooked his glasses behind his ears.
"But it wouldn't hurt if you stayed put a couple more days. Smells like another storm coming, anyway."
That Wade could smell anything over pig manure would be a miracle. "Maybe that's a reason to go. The Chuckies will probably hunker down, and Rule's only a few days away at most. If the weather holds, I can be there even sooner." Tom scraped out the last of the manure and tossed the shovel back into the wheelbarrow. There were still the cow and horse stalls to clean out, and if he wanted a jump on the weather, he needed to get his gear together. "I appreciate your offer, but I really do have to leave in the morning."
"Suit yourself."
Jamming his hands in the pockets of his worn barn coat, Wade shrugged.
I'll just go tell Nikki to put by some hard-boiled eggs, and I know we got a couple jars of—
You don't have to do that, Wade, Tom said, feeling instantly guilty.
Forget it. Wade waved off his objections. Least I can do.
By the time he got to the chickens, he was working by flashlight. The straw in the coop hadn't been changed in months, and the ammonia reek almost knocked him over. For such a slovenly farmer, Wade was very particular about separating out his manure, and chicken crap went into the woods to compost.
Which figures.
Pushing the wheelbarrow through deep snow was impossible, so he'd had to go out on snowshoes first, follow the trail he and the animals had already broken, and stomp until the base layer was firm enough for the barrow not to sink. On the way, he'd spotted Nikki slogging toward the vegetable garden with a bowl for the dog and returned her wave. Now, huffing toward the woods with the loaded barrow, he swung the yellow beam toward the garden and saw that the dog had tucked itself into the shelter, its tail fluffed over its nose.
Right, sleep it off, he said, but he was also relieved.
Better that the dog should rest up and start out with a full belly. It was when he was scattering scratch feed for the chickens that he noticed something. Wade had a lot of feed. Barley, corn, good hay, scratch for the chickens. He stared down at the handful of seed and cracked corn raining between his fingers. But how was Wade getting it? Wade's only wagon had a broken axle. Even if the wagon had been in good repair, there was no way that one horse, not even a dray at that, could pull very much for very long in deep snow. Plus, there just weren't enough animals to justify all this feed. Despite his talk about maybe building up his hogs, Wade wasn't exactly energetic. The old guy couldn't care for the animals he already owned. And why wasn't the feed stored in that stone silo? It was perfectly sound, yet Wade kept all his feed binned in the barn off the main paddock. All of it. Then Tom really thought about all that manure he'd shoveled, all those poop piles scattered around. So much crap. And not one burn barrel. Instead, the Kings had porta-johns, not one or two, but three. So he hauled those here? That was a possibility, and it would be good thinking. Emptying chamber pots would get pretty old, and he bet there weren't many farms with outhouses before the zap. He and Jed had built an outhouse with a removable barrel, just like Tom had used in Afghanistan, and traded off on burn-shitter duty. But if Wade had hauled the portable toilets to his farm, how had he done it? Maybe another wagon in that old barn? After closing up the coop, he trudged out to the wheelbarrow. That was probably it. At the back of the hog barn, he slotted the wheelbarrow, then glanced in the direction of that prairie barn. He couldn't see it beyond the limits of the flashlight, but he sensed it silently brooding in the snow. Of all the jobs Wade mentioned, he'd never once suggested they work on the barn. Why was that? Sure, there were more immediate problems, but any farmer took care of his tools and machinery. He flicked a quick look at the house. The front windows were dark, although the kitchen window in back fired a dull yellow. Nikki would be there, and Wade, too. He slid the flashlight out of his hip pocket. Just a peek. Chapter 54. It was a machine graveyard. Tom fanned his light over a tractor, a manure spreader, and two Ford F-150s. Racks of farm implements and tackle lined the right wall. He even spotted a branding iron, which made him pause. Had those hogs been branded? He searched his memory. No. A farmer notched a pig's ears, some complicated system, he didn't know what. Branding was for cattle and horses. So maybe the milkers or that bay. He just couldn't remember. A loaded pegboard was mounted above an elaborate tool bench with two vices. The cave-in had dumped snow over a large electric band saw with a circular blade that Tom thought was used for slicing through meat and bone. If so, that saw hadn't seen action for a long time. But the axe and that cleaver had. Both rested on a freestanding workbench that reminded him of the butcher block his dad had used to hack beef ribs. The hand axe had a thin stainless steel blade and leather grip, lightweight, easy to swing, well-balanced. The steel was clean but nicked in places, as if the axe had seen heavy use. Purple splotches stained the leather grip, and more blood had seeped into the cleaver's handle, swelling and then cracking the wood. A slop bucket rested on the concrete next to the butcher block. Stiff rags stained with dark, oily splotches were draped over the rim and smelled of old gore. Alongside the workbench was a large white chest freezer. Of course, it wasn't plugged in. The barn was colder than any meat locker. Rust-red tongues drooled from the freezer's lip. Nicky had served pork stew the first night. Wade had offered to feed hamburger to the dog. No, that's crazy. He felt his mind flinching away even as the suspicion formed. So the kings did their own butchering, so what? But would I know? Aiming the flashlight at the dried blood, he felt suddenly queasy. God, shouldn't I be able to tell if it hadn't been pork or beef, but a person? Heart thumping, he levered open the freezer, and his breath left in a white rush. Empty. Then, across the barn and to the right, something scuffled. Startled, he pivoted, raised his flashlight, expecting to see the bright coins of the cat's eyes, or maybe a rat or raccoon. The light broke over a trio of what might once have been long-abandoned horse stalls with doors on sliders. Something winked from the back corner. Stepping around the freezer, he aimed the light, caught the sparkle again, and frowned. A fourth stall completely closed off, with a heavy, shiny, stainless steel padlock dangling from a black ring latch as thick as his thumb. Scuffling, then a low whine. A puppy, that was his first thought. The kings had locked up a dog, probably muzzled it. He thought back to that growl Raleigh had aimed toward the barn. No wonder Raleigh wouldn't stay away. There was another dog locked up in here. Maybe it was sick. That was possible. When he was a kid, his dad had rented Old Yeller. He remembered how after the wolf fight, when the dog went rabid, the boy had locked Old Yeller in the corn crib and then shot him. Tom must have cried for a week. Knowing Wade, Tom thought he'd have gotten rid of a rabid dog, but it would be perfectly in character for the kings to simply sequester a sick puppy and maybe neglect it to death, save on a bullet. Poor thing. Hey, boy, he called softly. The dog responded with another whimper as he crossed to the stall. He played the light over the lock, then the rest of the door and the adjacent wall, looking for a key. Two keys dangled on a thin wire ring from a nail just to the left of the door. He reached and then paused. This was none of his business. He was leaving. The kings had the right to run their farm however they wished. The puppy whined again. Hey, boy. Slipping the ring off the nail, he slotted one of the keys into the lock. Hang. That last word never did leave his mouth. He saw now that the door was oak and sturdy, but not completely solid. There was a large knot hole about two-thirds of the way down, near the level of his right knee. It was dark, and he shouldn't have been able to see a hole. By definition, no one ever did. A hole existed because of where it wasn't. But there was something here, grimy and very thin, but completely recognizable. A finger. And then it moved. Chapter 55. Shit! Tom sucked in a quick, startled gasp. The keys tinkled to the frigid concrete. Every hair on the nape of his neck stood on end. Then he knelt. Hello? Are you hurt? The finger slid away, and then he saw a flash of white as the kid, he was convinced it was a child, briefly pressed an eye to the knothole before wincing away from the light. Sorry, Tom aimed the flashlight away. Now that he was closer, he smelled stale flesh and ammonia and moldering straw mixed with feces. Kid, are you okay?
What's your name?
The child might have said something, but Tom's heart was pounding so hard he could barely hear. My God, he sounds hurt. He swept his light back and forth over the floor until he found the keys. Get him out, then saddle up Dixie, find my gear, get the guns, and then Raleigh. His hands shook. Clamping the flashlight under an arm, he used both hands to sock the key home. If he had to, he would herd the kings into a room and lock them up until he was ready to go. Wait until morning when it's light. His wrist turned, the lock snicked open. Then we get as far from here. A wide spotlight pinned him in place. On the door, before his eyes, his shadow sprang to life, black and perfectly defined, as if Tom were an actor backlit on a stage. Then there came a loud, unmistakable sound of a shotgun being racked. Ka-chunk crunch! In the stall behind the door, the boy whimpered. Tom turned slowly, a hand up to shield his eyes.
Oh, Tom, Wade said. I wish you hadn't done that.
Chapter 56. Nikki made him strip. Unlike Wade, his wife was thin as a whippet and brittle as broom straw. Her gray eyes showed absolutely no emotion, but when Tom stopped at his underpants, she said, "No, no, all the way, every stitch." The wood stove kept the kitchen and this small back room very warm. Fear sweat slicked his body and ran down the sides of his face, but he was shivering. Jed's tags rattled on their bead chain.
Why?
'Cause we can't have you running, Wade said from the kitchen.
Through the open door, Tom watched as Wade withdrew the brand, inspected the iron, then slid it back into the firebox.
That's bullshit. I'm not running in my shorts, Tom snapped.
Oh, I don't know.
Grunting, Wade planted his hands on his thighs and heaved himself up.
I saw this one National Geographic about this Eskimo who run over the ice for miles with not a stitch.
Come on, Tom, Nikki gestured with the shotgun. Shorts, too.
No, Tom said.
Fine. Right knee or left? When he didn't respond, she said, "Don't think I won't. So long as you're alive, they don't care what shape you're in. It's all the same to us, but..." Her eyes trailed over his body, first down and then up again, her gaze touching on every scar left by shrapnel, lingering on the divot in his right thigh. Her lips curled when she saw the scar on his neck. "That's a nice hickey. Girlfriend get a little carried away?" Well, she probably won't mind another ding or two, considering that you're kind of tore up already. Her face blanked again. Don't make me waste a shell, Tom. All right, this is about domination. He hooked his thumbs under the waistband of his underpants. Come on, this is right out of survival training. Don't let them get on top of you. But what could he do to stop them? He let his underpants fall to his ankles and then kicked them away. They had the gun, and he'd been an idiot. That's good. Nikki lifted her chin toward a straight-backed chair bolted to the floor. Now, you sit down and put on those plastic thingamabobs. First your ankles to the chair legs, and then whichever hand you want to do first. Last hand, you'll have to use your teeth. God, how many times had they done this before? His heart was trying to thrash its way out of his chest. He didn't move toward the chair. He might already be finished, but if he put on those plastic cuffs, he was as good as dead. What did you do with Raleigh? Did you kill him? With any luck? Nikki shrugged. Shame to waste a good farm dog, but can't have him barking every time he scents a Chucky.
What?
Something cold settled in his chest. The axe, the blood on the freezer.
Oh, God, the kid. You're feeding him.
Sure. Get more if you can deliver a Chucky alive.
Then Wade saw his face and hawked out a laugh so hard his belly jiggled.
No, we're not going to chop you up into burgers if that's what you're worried about, although we kind of run out a day ago, and I know that little bastard's hungry. Thing is, you're worth a lot more alive than in some Chucky's gullet. he starves to death, I don't know I care very much. They'll take him no matter what, and he'll keep just fine in the cold. Hunters are due real soon anyway.
How do they know when to come? Tom asked. He didn't really want the answer, but every second he stayed out of that chair was one more when he still had a chance.
Run up the old flag when we got something. I guess they got spotters.
The flag. Tom clamped back on a moan. My God, it was so obvious, right there in plain sight. He'd wanted to believe he was safe, and now he was dead.
I don't ask a lot of questions. They go about their business, and I mind mine.
Wade pulled open the stove's firebox.
All I care about is getting what's owed me.
That's where the feed's coming from, isn't it? Tom asked.
Oh, yeah.
Wade reached into the firebox with a hand sheathed in a thick red leather glove.
I turn you in, I bet I'll get a nice new wagon, and maybe a good dray.
A barter system. That had to be it. Capture a Chucky or young people who hadn't turned, and you'd be rewarded. With mounting horror, Tom watched as Wade inspected the brand. The black iron, an open V that Wade said represented a broken bone, which Tom thought very apt, was turning a soft gray. The choke of scorched iron lodged in his throat. It's the smell of saws going cyclic, of spent brass cascading over rock, of a gun barrel so hot it jams and he has to spit into the breach as he works, desperately to clear his weapon. And there are voices, always the voices, streaming out of the merciless sun and through the speaker in his helmet.
Jesus Christ! Cut the wire! Cut the fucking wire and grab the kid or you're dead! You're dead! You're...
Tom!
At the sound of his name, Tom blinked away from the horror show of memory to find Wade there in this nightmare of the present. The broken bone brand was not red hot the way it was in movies, but ashen. Tom felt the heat shimmers from 5 feet away.
Time to sit down now, Wade said.
You don't need to do this, he said, already knowing it was a waste of breath.
Well, I don't brand you. I can't prove I turned you in. Don't want to get cheated.
They had the gun, and there was nowhere to run. The one thing survival school had drummed in over and over again was that unless the mission was in jeopardy, choose life. Another thing he'd learned, eyes always give you away. Control your eyes, and unless your opponent was a mind reader... Wade was closer. Nikki had the gun. He looked at Nikki. He went for Wade. Chapter 57. He moved fast, aimed low, his right arm flashing out and sweeping up. He screamed as the metal brand sizzled into skin, a quick lick of fire that seared his flesh and burned hair. But Wade lost his grip. The iron clattered to the floor as Tom drove forward, twisting at the waist, pushing off from his back foot, left elbow cocked. He rammed the bony point into Wade's gut so hard he felt the impact all the way to his shoulder. Wade let out a breathy, low grunt, and then the old man was staggering, his weight pulling him off balance. Tom stayed with him, bare feet slapping wood, his hands knotted in Wade's shirt, driving, driving. Out of the corner of his eye, Tom saw Nikki pivot, the shotgun coming up, and then he vaulted around the old man. The roar was enormous. The room jumped in a brilliant burst of light. At close range, the shot from a 12-gauge ought to penetrate straight through and tag him, too. But Wade was huge, a 300-pound human shield. The big man jerked. There was a sound like the burst of a water balloon on cement as Wade's blood splattered against wood. He felt Wade beginning to crumple, heard Nikki shrieking over the ringing in his ears. He was already moving again, pushing off with his stronger left leg, rounding the body, staying as low as he could. He saw Nikki just ahead, less than 10 feet away, eyes wide, mouth open. In her shock, her arms had loosened and the shotgun was pointing down and away. Go, 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 go! He sprang, left hand clawed for a grab, right elbow cocked. One good punch. His right foot came down on the thick slick of Wade's blood. It was like slipping on a patch of glare ice. He felt his balance going, his right foot shooting out. He let out a startled grunt, twisted, tried to break his fall, but failed. He crashed down hard, his left hip jamming against the solid wood floor. A rocket of pain exploded into his pelvis, and then he was gasping, rolling, trying to find his footing, on all fours now. Then his eyes jerked to the right, and there on the floor, 6 inches away. Above, over his shoulder, he risked a single glance. Nikki's face twisted in a mask of rage, and then she was dragging the shotgun up, pulling the trigger. Nothing. No shot. Tom saw from her face that she realized her mistake at the same moment he did. In her rush, she'd forgotten to rack the shotgun. Her forearms corded as she fumbled. Her hands were wires. She worked the pump as he darted for the brand. K-chunk! Already thinking, too slow, too slow, too slow. Krunk! His right hand snatched at the brand, still incredibly hot, and then he was sweeping around, scything the air in a vicious backhand. He felt the instant the brand connected, cutting her legs out from under. The shotgun boomed again, but the blast was wild, a spurt of fire licking at the ceiling. Nikki tumbled to the floor, and the shotgun clattered away, and she was shrieking, "I'll kill you! I'll kill you! I'll kill you, you little fuck!" Hands singing with fresh pain, Tom lunged for the shotgun, grabbed it up, and then he was spinning around, racking the pump, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, and stopped dead. There were two of them, a square woman in winter white camo and an even older man with dark eyes and wisps of steam curling from a black watch cap glued down to his skull. Both had rifles. On the floor, Nikki crabbed back. "No! No! We..."
"Here," the dark-eyed man said to Tom. "Let me."
His rifle bucked and Nikki King's face cratered. Chapter 58. No one moved. The Kings couldn't. Tom didn't dare.
"You okay?" the man said. "They hurt you?"
He was on his back, bare-ass naked in a pool of blood, a shotgun clutched in both hands and the smell of burned gunpowder and his own crisped skin stinging his nose.
"I'm all right," he said. "Who are you?"
The woman spoke for the first time. Her pale eyes darted toward the kitchen and then fixed on Tom.
"Is there a boy here?"
"I think he's out in the barn, the big one. They have him locked up."
"Why?"
The skin around her lips whitened.
"He's..."
Tom swallowed. "You know."
"Oh, God."
She closed her eyes a moment. Her fingers rose to her lips.
"Damn it."
"You don't know it's him," the man said.
"But we know who took him."
She whirled on her heel.
"I'm going out there."
"Melly," the man began. "You don't..."
"He's mine,"
she shot back, and then she was gone. The dark-eyed man stared after her for a moment, and then turned back to Tom. The old man's gaze clicked to the dog tags dangling on their beaded chain, and then he cocked his head at the litter of Tom's clothes.
"Why don't you get dressed, soldier?"
"Who are you people?"
Tom asked.
"Get dressed," the man said and turned to go. "Then we'll talk."
The shot came as he fumbled the buttons of his flannel shirt. He stopped, held his breath, listened for more, but there was only the one. A short time later, he heard footsteps and the murmur of their voices. His right palm was already blistering, but it hurt. From Afghanistan, he knew that third-degree burns didn't. He could stand the pain, been hurt way worse, but he'd need antibiotic salve and bandages pretty soon. He hefted the shotgun. There was no other way out of this small back room, not even a window, and there were two of them. He could shoot first and ask questions later, but they could have killed him already, twice. On the other hand, the Kings had said he was worth more alive. When he walked into the kitchen, the woman was sitting at the kitchen table. Her rifle was flat on the floor. The old guy had shouldered his.
"There you go, soldier,"
he said, setting a basin of water in front of a third chair. His manner was cowpoke-friendly.
"Best you stick that hand in there. It's cold, but that's good for burns."
Tom didn't move. After what he'd been through, he wasn't going to make the same mistake of trusting anyone twice. He held the shotgun by his right hip, the business end pointing toward the guy's center mass.
The woman would have to bend, snatch, grab, and aim. He could rack the pump again and get off around before she even knew she was dead.
Are you the bounty hunters?
The woman let out a watery laugh.
Only in a manner of speaking. That boy out there, Teddy, I've been searching.
Her voice trembled, and she stopped a moment, swallowed, passed a hand over her face. When she looked back up at Tom, her pale eyes were glazed with tears.
He was in a group of children I'd been taking care of since, you know, hunters took him from me.
That was plausible. The poor kid had to come from somewhere.
How did you know to come here? Tom asked.
You'd be surprised how fast word gets around, the man said. There are only so many farms out this way. When we met up, he nodded at the woman, I had a pretty good idea where we ought to look.
Tom thought back to Jed and Grace. They had been careful and isolated, but all it had taken was one very nosy neighbor. Again, plausible. But what were these people doing out here to begin with? Were they working together? The old guy said they'd met up. What did that mean? What were these two old people doing wandering around in the dead of winter to begin with? The woman's story he understood, but what was the story with the wannabe cowboy?
But to tell you the truth, the old man continued, I wasn't sure until I saw the flag. A lot of militia groups use something similar. Played a hunch, that's all.
Militia? A small finger of unease nudged his chest. Jed had warned him about this, but Tom had been naive enough to believe the militias were local to Wisconsin. Of all people, he ought to know better. Wherever there were civilians, there must be militias, some more organized, entrenched, and better prepared than others. Some might even have been expecting and hoping for the world to go kaboom and planned accordingly. Surviving members would naturally come together. Sick as the logic was, he understood why he and other younger survivors might be valuable, if for nothing else than to generate replacements. But why would some want Chucky's?
The king said it was a signal. It's been up 2 days, he said.
The man looked at the woman.
Then we got to move. Sooner we get going, the better.
I'm not going anywhere with you, Tom said.
It would be safer, the man said.
I don't know who you are.
I'm Melly Bridger, the woman said. She held out a hand speckled with age. When Tom didn't move, she folded her hand back into her lap.
We're going to our base camp. That's where I was headed with my group when Teddy was taken 10 days ago. The other kids should already be there.
Uh-oh. A base camp implied a much bigger operation. If these people were scouts for what was left of the military, this could be very bad for him.
Might have gotten rescued from the frying pan to land in the fire.
What camp? Where?
Where are you headed?
The man asked, his tone still cowboy-friendly.
I'm not sure that's any of your business.
Listen.
The aw-shucks expression the old guy wore slipped just enough that Tom caught a quick glint of something almost predatory.
In case it's kind of escaped your notice, we just saved your ass. We're trying to help you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I really do.
He really did.
But why should you care about me?
You rather we side with the bounty hunters?
This guy, Tom thought, was very good at deflecting questions and putting people on the defensive. He had just the right amount of bluster. That's not an answer. The old guy opened his mouth, but Melly put a hand on the man's arm.
Back off a little. Can't you see he's scared and hurt? Cut the boy some slack.
The guy looked like he wanted to say something, then shrugged.
Whatever. He wants to end up bait, no skin off my butt. I'd advise not heading east, though.
East was precisely the direction he needed to go.
I'm headed to Rule.
Tom watched them toss a look.
What?
Well, he's right, Melly said, tipping her head at the man.
I don't think you want to go there.
That was what Wade had said, too.
Why not?
You feeling lucky?
The guy asked.
The way's real thick with Chuckies. That's why we're fighting them and Rule.
Why fight Rule?
Why do you want to go there so bad?
Tom debated a half second, then said, There's a girl I know. We got separated a while back, but she was headed there. He saw something spirit over the man's weathered face, like he was adding two and two to make four.
She have a name?
He didn't see how it would hurt. Alex.
What?
The old man's mouth actually dropped open in an expression of genuine shock.
Did you say Alex?
Yes. Tom saw that Melly was studying the old man with a look of appraisal, her eyes narrowed. Why?
Well, I'll be a son of a...
The old guy seemed almost confused, at a loss for words. He ran a gnarly, calloused hand over his mouth, but Tom couldn't tell if the old guy was searching his memory or trying to decide what might be the safest and best thing to say. But the eyes that found Tom were as dark and bright and canny as a buzzard's.
I'll be damned. You're the soldier, aren't you?
The man said.
You're the kid who knows explosives, the one we went looking for months ago. You're Tom.
Chapter 59.
He knows me.
Hearing his name drop from this stranger's mouth cut his legs out from under. Tom thought Melly sucked in a quick, startled breath, but he was so shocked he couldn't be sure. Later, he would decide he'd been mistaken. Now he felt the blood leave his face and the world tilt. This stranger, this old man, knew him, knew his name, and months ago meant...
How?
He said hoarsely. How do you...
Because I've met Alex, the old guy said. I know her. Oh, thank God, she made it. She's safe.
Surviving his first firefight was exactly the same, a wash of exhilaration and then relief that left him sick and shaky and sweaty as a junkie. Tom's knees wobbled, and he felt the sudden tightness in his throat and then the burn of tears.
She's alive.
Easy, easy.
The man was up now and wrapped his arm around Tom's shoulders.
Come on, son, you're all done in. Let's sit you down.
No, I need to see her. We should go, Tom said, but he felt suddenly weak, the combination of shock and relief and all that had happened that day finally draining him of strength.
He let the old man jockey him into a chair.
How far? How long will it take us to get there?
Not so fast.
The man looked away, jaw working, as if trying out the right words and seeing how they fit in his mouth. He returned his attention to Tom.
It's not what you think. We got to talk about what you and us are up against here.
Up against? A flare of panic now. Why? What's wrong? Is Alex all right? Is she hurt?
Something clicked in his brain. They went back for me, but I was already gone. They'd assume I was dead, and Alex would...
Is she still there? Did she leave? What's going on?
More than you know.
The man's face seemed to close.
Alex talked them into a rescue. Believe me, it wasn't easy, but she was a pit bull about it. Everyone knew it was a huge risk, but when she told the boys in charge that you were a soldier and knew explosives, well, you should have seen their faces light up. They couldn't hustle out of Rule fast enough. But when we got there, you were already gone. Everyone figured you were dead.
So he'd been right. A terrible black foreboding washed through him. If Alex thought I was dead, would she stay? Oh, God, what if she didn't believe it? What if she went looking for me?
Is she... Did she leave? Where did she go?
Where did you go? Melly had been so quiet and watchful that Tom had forgotten she was there. Melly laid a hand on his shoulder.
Where were you exactly?
Wisconsin. Blame the shock and his confusion, but the word tumbled from his mouth before he had time to think.
Where in Wisconsin?
Melly asked. He ran his good hand through his hair.
A couple, Jed and Grace, they came through on their way west. I was pretty out of it. I honestly don't remember much. All I know is I woke up 4 or 5 days later and we were at their cabin. Grace was a nurse and...
Cabin? Melly echoed.
Odd Lake, yeah. Still reeling, Tom returned his attention to the man. He could feel his brain trying to put all the pieces together.
I don't understand. You're from Rule. You came to find me. So why are you fighting Rule now? What's going on? Why are you here and not in Rule? Who are you people?
My name's Weller, Tom. And I hate to say, but Alex...
Weller showed his teeth in a grimace. Oh, no, I'm too late. I waited too long.
But what? But what?
I'm real sorry, Tom, but the last I knew, Alex was in the prison house.
What? Prison house? He cried, aghast.
That she was alive should have buoyed him, but this was five times worse. If prison house had the same meaning in this village as it did in Afghanistan, if they tortured people, Alex might be as good as dead.
In Rule? Why?
Well,
again, Weller's hand slowly wiped his mouth. It was the reluctant gesture of a man thinking, and very carefully, about what he should say next.
Jesus,
Tom said. He could feel the sweat beating on his upper lip. Just say it!
They're... Let's just say they've got some real bad actors in that village,
Weller said finally. He looked straight into Tom's eyes.
We're not only talking the way the village has been run before everything went to hell. I'm talking now, how they treat people, the things they've done to secure the borders in particular.
What does that have to do with Alex? Why would they throw her in a prison?
Let's just say she, wouldn't cooperate.
Weller's features arranged themselves into an expression of regret.
Meaning?
You seem like a smart boy, Tom, Melly interrupted. You've been to war. You've seen how fast things break down. So what do you think happens to young girls at the hands of old men?
And not all of them old, Weller added softly.
He and Melly traded another long look before he repeated,
Not all.
Oh, my God. He had to close his eyes. Now, Weller's reluctance, how carefully he'd seemed to search for words, made perfect sense.
This is my fault. If she hadn't been alone, if I hadn't gotten myself shot, none of this would have happened.
He heard his voice rise as if from the hollow blackness at the bottom of a well.
Tell me what to do to get her out, and I'll do it.
He opened his eyes and found Weller.
I'll do whatever it takes.
There was a tiny, nearly invisible tug at one corner of Weller's mouth, a look of satisfaction there and gone in the blink of an eye.
Well, the kid who called the shots, he said, his name was Peter, but you don't have to worry about him. He got himself killed in an ambush and good riddance. But the kid who's taken over, son of a bitch, is a psychopath.
What kid? Tom asked. What's his name?
Boy by the name of Prentice, Weller said. Chris Prentice.
Chapter 60.
Are you all right?
Still huffing, winded from the desperate struggle, Chris pushed up from the bloodied snow. He looked toward Nathan, who sprawled against the school's north wall. Nathan was breathing hard, a hand clamped to his left bicep. Blood oozed between his fingers. His parka was shredded from shoulder to elbow.
He bite you anywhere else?
No. Lucky his feet went out from under on the ice, though.
Nathan's face was the color of ash.
Little bastard latched onto her like a damned leech.
The old man pulled his head around his shoulder and called,
He get you bad?
No.
Lena huddled in a heap of clothing at the corner of the building and beneath the breezeway where they'd tethered the horses. The breezeway ran on the east wall and led to a snow-covered jungle gym and the tatters of a lonely basketball hoop. The change had torn her parka open at the throat. Livid, bright red scratches stood in parallel tracks on her neck where his nails had first stripped away her scarf before clawing at her sweater. That he hadn't used his teeth was a miracle.
Where did he come from? Why was he here? The school's all by itself. No houses nearby. Nothing.
I don't know.
Chris stared down at the boy. The changed wasn't quite dead, but still gulping, trying to pull in air through the blood pulsing from his mouth and around the knife jammed halfway in his throat. His feet scraped snow in a slow shamble. Then the boy managed a faint, gurgling caw, and Chris couldn't stand it any longer. Kneeling, he wrapped his hands around the knife, felt it move against his palms as the boy's throat convulsed, and rammed the blade home. He felt the tip scrape bone, the slight hesitation as it parted through tendon and muscle along the boy's spine. Chris let his weight fall. The boy flopped as the steel found his spinal cord. A bright crimson gusher boiled from his mouth. His hands were fluttery starfish that twitched and jumped before folding, going limp, and finally dying. Chris waited a few more seconds to make sure, then tugged out his knife. There was blood everywhere, on the snow, the boy, his own hands.
"She's right. I don't get it," Nathan said. "There are no tracks out here. He had to be in the school."
Which meant that the boy had bypassed them to get to Lena, and that made no sense. When Lena screamed, Chris had been on the second floor, slipping from room to room. There had been many bodies, people popsicles, really, all of them frozen solid, and only some with portions, an arm here, a foot there, gnawed to bare bone. The halls were filmed with a fine cover of ice and snow, but he'd seen no tracks except his own. So there had been plenty of food, and no need for the boy to show himself at all. From his tracks, the changed had vaulted out of the school's library, which was the way both he and Nathan had entered. Still on the ground floor and at the back of the school, Nathan had made it out first. But Nathan was right there. Why not go after him or me? We were inside and much closer. Why leave? Why go outside for Lena? Hell, why go after her in the first place? He looked back at Lena, still cringing, a hand bunched to her scratched throat. Although he'd had plenty of time, the boy hadn't bitten her anywhere. It's like he wanted to get at her. He eyed the tangle of green scarf and that torn parka, like maybe he wanted to... A chill shivered over his skin. The idea that the boy might have had rape on his mind disturbed him almost more than if the changed had only wanted to tear out Lena's throat.
"Do you think there are any others?" Lena asked.
"Good question." He rifled a glance at the horses, but they'd quieted, not that horses were all that reliable an indicator. Dogs were much more sensitive to the changed.
"I don't think so, but we probably should get out of here. Even if he was by himself, there are a lot of bodies in there. Might be others who decide to drop by for a meal, you know? Our horses were pretty loud, and so were we."
"Move? Again?"
Lena's skin was milky, the circles under her eyes as dark as charcoal. She was sick, eating barely enough to keep a tick alive, but she wouldn't talk about it. He was starting to have a nasty suspicion why. The question was, what would he do about it?
"Chris," she said, "we haven't gotten any rest
in days, I know."
Trotting over to the roan, he unhooked his pack and then came back to kneel by Nathan. Through the rip, he could see the blood welling through a jagged rip, but no pumpers. He took out a medical kit.
"But we can't stay here, Lena, not now."
"We're in the middle of nowhere. The school's all by itself. There are no other tracks, so he's probably the only one. Chris, we have to rest sometime."
He bit back an impatient reply. Getting angry wouldn't help. Instead, he turned his attention to Nathan, easing the old man's injured arm from its sleeve and then setting about sponging off blood. He had no answers for Lena, and she was right. They were all tired. Although they'd finally decided to start looping back north and west, they'd been on the road for 11 days now. At their current rate, Oren was still a good 10 days in the future if they were lucky, and 2 weeks if they were not. They had to get some rest.
"Has it ever been so bad?" Lena persisted. "With the changed coming after you? This is the 4th kid in 2 days."
"I don't know much about this area,"
he said, unrolling Curlix around Nathan's wound. Any time I've gone east of Rule, it's always been with a big group where we had lots of guys and guns and dogs. Nathan? The old man only shook his head. All those prints and bone mounds we've found are old. We haven't run across a single homestead or group of survivors, young or old.
Maybe they ran away, Lena said.
Or they're all dead, Nathan said. My point is, there's no fresh meat anywhere. There shouldn't be changed around here at all, right? So what's the story with that little stash of bodies we found in the school? Oh, boy. He'd never considered that possibility. You're talking a storehouse, like a meat locker. I'm talking exactly that.
Nathan pulled in a sudden hiss of pain, exposing yellowing teeth and gums that were the color of putty.
I don't think that's a very good sign, do you?
You mean there'll be more? Lena's voice was tremulous. Like they might be coming now?
There are no fresh prints, Chris said. This private school was secluded and lay at the end of a quarter-mile driveway, and theirs were the only tracks. From the lie of the land, this whole area looked like it had once been pasture. Other than a football field and bleachers humped with snow, there were no other buildings, and the nearest woods were a good half-mile distant.
I don't know enough to understand what that means, Nathan said.
He didn't either.
So what do you think? Stay or go?
We should stay, Lena said. You said yourself the prints are old. Look at this. She used the toe of her boot to scuff a white bloom of icy powder. It snowed again just last night. This is all fresh. You can tell we're the only ones who've been through.
I'm not wild about either choice, Nathan said. But we've been on the move almost continuously for the last 20 hours. The horses are done in, and humping it back into any kind of woods with good cover means another 2-3 hours. If the animals were rested and we had some decent moon to light the way, it might be a different story.
After 11 days on the road, Nathan's skin was drawn and his cheeks hollowed from lack of rest and poor food.
Even if we make it to the woods, sun's gonna go before we can make camp.
We should stay, Lena repeated. He was probably alone. This might just have been this kid's private stash. The others would have come out already, right? With no fresh tracks, that means there's been nobody else in the last 2 days. We can barricade ourselves in somewhere on the second floor. If we get rid of the body and bring the horses in, maybe no one will know we're here.
Those were all good points. Chris's eyes flicked back to the dead boy. The changed was young, no more than 13, and looked healthy, well, aside from being dead. He was dressed for the weather, too. He studied the kid's face, which still had a trace of baby fat under the chin. Eating pretty well, too, so maybe he was only defending his stash, but he had to know we're no threat to that, and the only person he went for was...
Chris, Lena said.
Give me a second. The kid chose Lena. He could have taken Nathan or me. He could have left us alone. But he had to get at her, and he risked his life to do it.
God, he didn't like where this line of thought was going. It might be nothing, but he thought he knew a way to test that.
Okay, he let out a long breath. I vote we stay. Nathan, there's a corner room on the second floor just above us, with windows east and north, and another on a diagonal south and west. We'll have a good shot at seeing anything coming.
Stooping, he bent and hooked his hands under the dead boy's pits. Lena, let's get him out of sight and then cover over the blood.
Lena looked about as thrilled as if he'd asked her to pick up dog crap, but she only nodded.
It'll be okay, she said, grabbing the kid's ankles. It can't be any more dangerous than the woods.
That was when he lied to her for the first time.
Yeah, he said. Probably not.
Chapter 61
Here.
Sliding to a sit beside him at his lookout, Lena handed him a steaming aluminum camp cup.
I made you some tea.
Thanks, he said, mildly surprised. He'd left Lena and Nathan next door in what had once been a chemistry lab. The room was downwind, but they'd used duct tape along the seams and under the door just in case. The horses were in the gym because there were no windows, and the one exit was easier to block off. The horses would leave mounds of crap on the basketball court, but he couldn't think of a soul who would care. He cradled the hot metal in both hands. The steam was sweet and smelled orange.
How come you're awake?
Couldn't sleep. I'm too wired, and my ears are cold. I can't remember where I put my scarf, either. Nathan's out, though.
Her face was a dull silver glimmer in the darkness.
Anything going on?
Nope.
Full dark had come 6 hours ago. A thumbnail of moon sprayed the snow with a dank, dim verdigris like corroded bronze.
So maybe there are no others.
That would be nice. He sipped. The tea was very hot, but tasted good.
How are you feeling?
Not so great.
She paused, then added,
I need some decent sleep.
And something in your stomach. So go back to bed.
In a little while, she said. I don't want to be alone in there.
Nathan's there.
You know what I mean. I feel better when I'm with you.
He wasn't sure how to reply, and didn't. They sat in silence a moment longer, and then she said,
Do I talk in my sleep?
He blew on his tea and said carefully, Sometimes. Her face swiveled his way, but he might as well have tried reading the expression of a shadow.
What do I say?
He sipped tea as a delaying tactic and scalded the roof of his mouth.
Just stuff.
Huh.
She grunted, then hugged herself.
I thought so.
Sometimes I wake myself up and I know I've been talking.
Everyone has bad dreams, Lena.
Not like mine.
He thought of that horrible morning when he was 8 and had wandered downstairs to find no breakfast on the table and his father alternately sucking on bloodied knuckles and a bottle of Maker's Mark. There had been no Deidre, his father's girlfriend of the month, either.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Do you dream about stuff from, you know, before?
Oh, the nightmares had begun well before the world died.
His dreams were raw and violent and very loud, shouts and a woman's pleas, and then a weird rhythmic noise that started out hollow and dull and went on and on, becoming wetter and meatier and finally sodden, as if someone had taken a bat to an overripe cantaloupe.
None of what I dream about from before is very good, he said to Lena.
Me neither. I guess that's why all my dreams are bad, because it was bad. Isn't that weird? I mean, the world goes to hell, kids have changed into these monsters, but my life wasn't so great before.
He'd never thought about it in quite that way, but she was right. Getting to rule had been the only good thing to happen to him in years. Peter and he got along from the start. In fact, now that he thought about it, when they'd first met, Peter's face had shifted from shock to, well, joy. He made Chris feel like he'd finally found his way home. Brothers could not be closer.
You know what's really freaky? In rule, I was probably the happiest I'd ever been.
Makes one of us, she said. How come you never asked me anything about before, living with the Amish?
Because he knew there was nothing good there, and he had enough dark memories of his own?
I don't know. None of my business. Besides, you and Peter were, you know, pretty tight. I figured you'd talk to him.
Some, but not much. She gave a little laugh. I'm, like, totally in love with the guy, but he never asked what a pagan like me was doing with the Amish. I only wanted to forget it.
He could feel that she wanted to tell him.
So why were you there?
My mom was this complete druggie, she said, matter-of-factly. Crystal meth and cocaine to go up, booze to come down. She flunked rehab like 10 times or something stupid. I guess she thought that being Amish was her ticket to getting clean, so she married this drooly old perv named Crusher Carl.
Carl,
That was a name she muttered in her sleep. What kind of name is that?
His nickname. Almost all the Amish have them, like this guy they called Pig John because he raised hogs. Crusher Carl used to work a quarry crushing stone, and he had these huge hands. He was a complete asshole, but my mom married him anyway. My brother and I never had any say.
That sucks. Tell me about it.
You know the Amish don't send their kids to school after 8th grade? I kept running away as often as I could, just to hike 5 miles to this bus stop so I could go. Can you believe it? Carl always dragged me back and locked me in the barn. Finally, the bishop told him to just leave me alone, but boy, that old bastard made sure I paid. He used to hit me with this riding crop he kept for the buggy horses. Of course my mom knew, but she only told the bishop, and he
didn't want the English involved,
she drawled in a broad German accent and snorted.
Asshole.
This was stuff he didn't need or want to hear, but he had no idea how to stop her.
I'm sorry.
Oh, he was the one who ended up sorry. Know what I finally did? She asked, then went on without waiting for his answer. I stabbed the bastard. He blinked.
You stabbed the bishop?
No, she said, as if he was a moron. Carl. One night he came by to visit, she punctuated with air quotes. He visited a lot.
Oh, he said, wishing she would just shut up.
Honestly, Lena, it's none of my business. She went on as if he hadn't spoken. It was the bishop and the ministers who decided to get rid of the body. The whole no English police thing. And you know, the Amish have this reputation for being so pure and all. I have no idea what they did with Carl or told the people at the quarry, but that was that. Carl was just gone like he'd never existed. I think they were secretly glad I'd gotten rid of the asshole.
He said nothing.
I never told anyone before, she said.
Why are you telling me now?
I don't know. Maybe it's a last confession or something.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Just talking.
Her voice was ragged and she sighed.
I'm really tired, but my head's crowded, like everything's kind of flooding out at once. Then other times I just go blank, like a white sheet of paper. It's so weird. Can you die if you don't sleep?
The only thing he knew was a person could go crazy, and she was definitely headed there.
You should get some sleep, he said, praying that she would listen. Please. Okay. She put a hand on his arm. Can I stay here? I know Nathan won't hurt me, but I'm kind of freaked out, you know, being alone with him.
He was just as uncomfortable having her stay, but he shucked out of the spare sleeping bag they'd found.
Here, you can use this. I'll be okay without.
Thanks, she said. He turned away to study the snow again, heard the bag rustle, then still. After another moment, her voice floated on the darkness.
Chris, can I ask you a question?
Lena, please go to sleep. I mean it.
I will. But I keep meaning to ask this, and I always forget. I don't know why.
Some things, like his past, and from the sound of it, hers, were best left forgotten. But he had a pretty good feeling what she would ask. On the way back from Oren, he'd gone over it in his head, rehearsing how he would break the news. But then Alex had run, Jess had clobbered him, and the rest was history.
What is it? You remember the boy? The one Greg brought back the morning Alex left? Was it?
Chapter 62. And then, in mid-sentence, Lena blanked, just fizzle, pop, gone, as if her brain had thrown a circuit breaker as a connection failed.
It was the strangest, weirdest feeling. Like her thoughts were words on a page that had been suddenly erased, her mind bleached completely white. Where am I?
She swept her eyes around the room, spotted a tumble of chairs and desks, books on the floor, and this boy on a stool.
Who is he?
Her gaze shot to the sleeping bag puddled at her waist.
Sleeping bag on the floor.
What am I doing here? Dark. She remembered that. Dreaming. Yeah, that was right. And then she'd snapped awake. Tea. She'd made tea for this boy because she wanted company. Who is he? Why can't I remember?
A lance of fear stabbed her chest and she began to tremble.
I must be sick. Her forehead was wet. Why couldn't she remember?
Hey! A white shimmer sailed from the dark, and his hand touched her shoulder. The voice said something more, but it was all so much gibberish and black sound.
What's wrong with me? The words were all locked up somewhere. Nothing made sense. Not where she was, or why, or even the shadowy figure of the boy looming over her. Who is he? Then, who am I?
Lena. The boy gave her a little shake. Are you okay?
Whatever grabbed her suddenly let go. Yeah, she said in a breathy little gasp.